Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Cover story this week is a special section, Coastal Boom. Fast-growing Brunswick County is among the coastal communities making a rising impact on the North Carolina economy. Before the cover story, we'll read the Biz section. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Durham Vet Clinic in expansion mode. A Durham veterinary clinic with business still rising after the surge in pet ownership in the pandemic is spending $10 million on a new 28-acre campus. The new Bahama Veterinary Medical Center breaks ground February 12th as the clinic moves into much bigger offices. The clinic opened in 2007 but has grown recently. Max Jones said the pandemic was definitely a boom in the pet industry. That has slowed down a little bit, but all these pets acquired in the pandemic are still around, and the demand for services is high. Not only are pet owners spending serious dollars to put their pets in daycare, they are also willing to spend significantly on health care. Jones said the new medical center will have advanced diagnostics, including a CT scanner. The general desire for high-quality care has increased substantially in the last 10 to 15 years, he said. Bahama Veterinary is making the move without looking to private equity, a rising trend in the industry. The impact of PE on the market has drawn scrutiny in Congress, with Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut arguing that prices for veterinary services have risen by 60% since 2014. Corporate veterinary care is not a new concept. It's been around 40-plus years, Jones said. But, he added, increasingly in the last 12 to 15 years, it's become really common, especially in growing areas like the Triangle. All that contributes to rising competition for talent, a challenge for clinics across the board. But still, Bahama Veterinary sees growth ahead, with expanded space and more extensive services. We want to be able to help your animal, even if there's something more involved, Jones said. Major revamp at Duke Gardens debuts in 2026. A redesigned Sarah P. Duke Gardens at Duke University is on its way as construction is underway on the transformation. Called the Garden Gateway Project, the changes include a new welcome center with cafe, gallery space, and outdoor meeting areas, upgraded learning and event facilities, expanded green space, and a more accessible entrance with a designated drop-off area for school buses. The redesign will cost $30 million and be complete in spring of 2026. Funding comes from gifts from the Duke Endowment and private donations. Irregardless hits a milestone in Raleigh. For years, Raleighites have asked, is irregardless really a word? The answer, yes. And since 1975, the Irregardless restaurant has served some of the city's best fare. Arthur and Anya Gordon operated the restaurant, Raleigh's first vegetarian restaurant, for 45 years before selling it to Lee Robinson in 2020. The restaurant is hosting dinners celebrating each decade it has operated. The first will be a 1970s-themed three-course dinner on March 26th. Dang, Biz should have kept that suede suit after all. More jobs are on the way to Youngsville. An investment that will create 100 full-time jobs in fast-growing Franklin County is about to come to fruition. Planetroy LLC, an IT management solutions company that specializes in providing data security, is opening a center in Youngsville later this month as part of a $9 million investment. The new facility will be located at 2405 Innovation Loop in the new US 1 North Commerce Center Industrial Park in Franklin County. Planetroy announced the investment in August. Finally, there's direct Memphis flights returning to RDU. Here at Biz, we've never been to Memphis, Tennessee, to see the Ducks at the Peabody Memphis Hotel, and now we may get a chance. Breeze Airways has added 5 nonstop flights out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, including one to Memphis. Also coming are Albany and Rochester in New York and Orlando and Pensacola in Florida. Memphis, in particular, is a major get for RDU. The route has not been regularly offered out of RDU since 2023, and is one of RDU's top unserved destinations. Memphis has Graceland, Beale Street, and, of course, the Ducks. The cover story this week is fairly expensive, so we'll go right into that. And if time permits, we'll come back and do some of the reporter pages. The editor has a note here. From the sand in our shoes to the salt air in our souls, many North Carolinians have always loved the coast. We wandered the Outer Banks, watched the boats at the Big Rock Tournament, and waited for heaps of fried shrimp and calabash. But the coast of North Carolina is evolving, and Triangle Business Journal's coverage is evolving with it. The coast no longer just thrives in the summer and then goes dormant. Now coastal communities are merging economic forces throughout the year, and society is more fluid, with Triangle business leaders reading spreadsheets and striking deals from porches on Riceville Beach. So every 2 weeks, TBJ will highlight the coastal businesses driving a new economy, one that's rooted in tradition and shaping the future of North Carolina. We welcome your tips, feedback, and suggestions as we weave new connections onto our coverage. And that's the managing editor, Dane Huffman, speaking. The first article in this coastal series is from Brunswick County, Megasites and Major Plans. As retirees pour in, Brunswick County looks to add jobs and families. And Ben Tobin's the article writer here. When a South Carolina developer announced its biggest housing project ever in January, it didn't pick the Triangle or Charlotte or even upstate South Carolina. Instead, Contender Development declared it would put a whopping 3,600 housing units in Brunswick County, the fastest growing county in the state and located just south of Wilmington. Contender paid a pretty penny to acquire the roughly 1,500 acres this property sits on, $35 million, according to Brunswick County deed records from January. As for why Contender is going so big in Brunswick County, Paul Luck, division president based out of Raleigh, pointed to a simple motto, follow the U-Hauls. If you follow the U-Hauls, you see where the migration patterns are going, he said. And with the migration coming into, with all the inbounds coming into the Carolinas, you get a feel for what the growth patterns are going to be and who the arrivals are. Broad Street CEO David Feingold, the private equity partner helping Contender Development fund the Brunswick County site, said the Midway Landing Project exemplifies how master plan communities will move beyond the focus on population centers to create new opportunities for growth and prosperity in the coastal regions of the Carolinas. So far, Brunswick's migration has been largely people of retirement age. Retirement age folks 65 and older comprise 34.4% of Brunswick County's population, according to the most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. That's almost double the percentage of people 65 and older that make up North Carolina's population. But that soon could be changing, and rapidly. Contender Development isn't the only company making a multi-million-dollar push to usher a new generation into Brunswick County. Quality of life as well as workforce availability within a 30-mile radius is what attracted Epsilon Advanced Materials to make a massive investment in Brunswick County in 2023, according to the CEO of the battery materials manufacturer. The India-based company made a splash in October 2023 when it announced it would invest roughly $650 million to build its first North American factory at the Mid-Atlantic Industrial Rail Park. Epsilon promised to create 500 jobs over 3 years to produce natural and synthetic graphite anode material and the proposed minimum average wage of $52,264. This could be just the start. Brunswick County has two mega sites or industrial parks with more than 1,000 acres, could be key to accelerating this youthful population growth. These two industrial gold mines, the Mid-Atlantic Industrial Rail Park and the International Logistics Park, are right next to one another. Between the two, there are close to 1,900 acres still available for development, according to Bill Early, executive director of the public-private Brunswick Business and Industry Development. Kirsty Dixon, county planning director, said attracting industry is essential for Brunswick County's future. We want to keep people in Brunswick County, Dixon said. For somebody that grows up here, we want to be able to provide them jobs to stay here. Losing younger people to Raleigh or other places where there are jobs has been a big issue. So to be able to use these mega sites as job creation hubs is vital. Despite its growth, Brunswick County still lacks retail and medical real estate, Dixon said, and residents head to Wilmington and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, for care. We have to keep some of the retail and medical services here, she said. Population age is an obstacle for achieving these goals. Retirees are driving Brunswick County's population boom, which grew at a rate of 4.6% between 2022 and 2023. But for the county to become a prosperous hub of commerce year-round, like Myrtle Beach and Wilmington, the county needs to bring down its median age, currently sitting at 57.6 years, and provide opportunities for young people to live, work, and play. To be sure, working-age people and school-age children are also moving to Brunswick County, according to Lisa Carlson, a research analyst with North Carolina Demography, housed at UNC Chapel Hill. But Brunswick County is the go-to moving spot in North Carolina for retirees, both for people inside and outside of North Carolina. Between 2011 and 2021, all 100 counties in North Carolina saw a growth in their share of people aged 65 and older. Brunswick County led that charge, with the 54.1% growth in retirement-aged individuals in that period, per Carlson. Meanwhile, Moore County, traditionally thought of as a retirement area with its myriad of golf courses, saw the smallest growth of that age demographic, 5.4% over the 10-year period. A lot of people who moved to Brunswick County outside of North Carolina are from New York State, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Ohio, Maryland, and Virginia, Carlson said. The biggest chunk of people are coming from New York, and except for Maryland, the median age of people coming in is about 60 or older. The growth overall for Brunswick County, as with the rest of North Carolina, is slowing down and will continue to do so, according to Carlson. Brunswick County's population, just shy of 160,000 now, per census estimates, is set to reach just shy of 275,000 by 2050, per projections from North Carolina's Office of State Management and Budget. That is, of course, major growth, but not quite the roughly doubling of population Brunswick County is expected to experience between 2010 and 2030. The population is expected to increase by at least one percentage point per year from now until 2050, Carlson said, but overall growth is slowing down due to declining birth rates. Early, with the Brunswick Business and Industry Development, knows that economic development can be a tough game. If all of the pieces don't align with the client's needs, then you get cut, he said. But Early feels bullish about the assets of the Mid-Atlantic Industrial Rail Park and the International Logistics Park. Located off of U.S. Highway 74-76, the two mega sites have some very heavy industrial infrastructure, with a lot of coastal communities do not have the most of, he said. These pieces of infrastructure include main electric power lines, natural gas, rail, and close access to both the Port of Wilmington and Wilmington International Airport. Additionally, at the International Logistics Park sits a more than 284,000 square foot spec building that has developed over phases in recent years, with more buildings on the horizon. Early said a strong majority of that space has been leased out. We don't just have the infrastructure, but we also have a quality of life here that helps some of these major companies attract and retain key labor, Early said. For the most part, we can check off any box the company has. And that was the case with Epsilon Advanced Materials. The selection process was a cumbersome one, CEO Sunit Kupar said. It took us more than a year to go through. We had almost 100 sites, which quickly came down to 8 or 9, and then from there we started kind of narrowing down to a few points. One of the major points was that our production process is quite energy intensive, so our requirements were clearly that we need power availability, and Duke Energy was gracious enough in our discussion to provide this power at the time we need it, which we wanted. Epsilon Advanced Materials plans to begin manufacturing in 2026 and reach full capacity in 2031, producing 50,000 tons per annum of graphite anode. With nearby electric vehicle projects from BMW's plant in Spartanburg, South Carolina, to the delayed VinFast plant in Chatham County, both Early and Kupar believe there's a real chance for the county to compete in the EV space. But for now, Kupar is bullish on the growth of young people in Brunswick County. I see a lot of young people now, he said. When I start seeing all the global change here, I thought to myself, this is not all for retirees. I think you'll see a lot of younger people moving around. Luck said Brunswick County and other areas on the North Carolina coast are capitalizing on the halfback trend. Halfbackers are people who retired from a northern state to Florida, decided it wasn't for them, and then moved halfway back. North Carolina is often seen as a halfway point on the East Coast, and Brunswick County is a destination for many. Since 2015, 53,263 housing units have been approved, according to the county's Dixon. The nation's largest home builder, D.R. Horton is continually buying up new land and planning new neighborhoods in the area, according to county deed records and the home builder's website. Brunswick County and the surrounding area has been a growing market for D.R. Horton over the last several years, said Pat Fitzgerald, city manager for D.R. Horton's Wilmington division. Subject to market conditions, we expect to close nearly 1,700 homes in Brunswick County over the next 2 years. On top of these closing, D.R. Horton and its third-party partners have more than 1,000 lots under development. Fitzgerald said single-family detached homes are the housing type of primary interest, but there's also rising demand for townhomes and attached homes. More multifamily and affordable housing options could be a key to a more diversified growth for the county, which isn't as affordable as the two large cities it is sandwiched between. The most recent estimates from Zillow found the average home value to be more than $413,000 in Brunswick County. In Wilmington, that metric is just above $400,000, and Myrtle Beach is just under $298,000. The tensions of growth. Kevin Moore, general manager of the Thistle Golf Club in the small Brunswick County town of Seaside Beach, moved to Brunswick County about a decade ago for work, and he said it's a place where I'd like to spend the rest of my days. Moore has seen business pick up in droves at his public golf course. He attributes much of that growth due to the pandemic, as golf remained one of the few sports people could play. But with this growth comes a choir of people who have some concerns over infrastructure, per Moore. You hear that quite often. How are we going to handle this growth? Because everywhere we look, they're building, he said. You always hear, they're ruining our beautiful beach. Why are they coming here? But everyone came here for a reason, and it belongs to everybody. If you have the funds to purchase property, then you should be able to do it. Dixon said the county planning board is now hearing 6 to 8 cases monthly, a major jump from 2 or 3 in the prior decade. She said that the public has gotten very vocal when it comes to new developments. One of the big challenges is a lot of the really great properties have already been developed for Brunswick County, so a lot of the properties left to be developed have some wetlands on them, she said. She added, you can drive down the street and see that there's homes being built into where there were trees before, so that affects people. A lot of members of the public don't really care for the development, so we do have a lot of pushback. We've worked really hard on having elements and projects that are good for the community. Early will play a pivotal role in solidifying the county's future as he works to attract more businesses to the company's megasites and, in turn, younger people. And he can see all the change taking place right outside his office at 1175 Turlington Avenue in Leland. Since I got here in 2017, the construction has been continuous, he said. I'm sitting here at my desk, and there's an orthopedic facility that's just been built. Chipotle has just opened. We've got another dental office under construction. There's some senior living apartments in the background, and all of this has been constructed from ground zero in the last 7 years. Just looking out my window every week, I see something new under construction. The next article in our Coastal Boom cover story is by Kaylee Thompson. Her headline, Homes, Jobs in Demand for Booming New Hanover County. New Hanover County is facing the same challenges as other growing areas, running out of room and lack of supply for commercial growth. The county includes Wilmington, which has become a top location for retirees, college graduates, and millennials. With this increase in population, there's been a higher demand in not only housing, but also different industries and employers to assist with the job market. John Hinnant, vice president of Eastern Carolina's Commercial Real Estate, said that the area is experiencing growth and supply challenges, especially since it has a strong NIMBY culture. Since the 2008 recession, our local economy has done a good job of diversifying. We've added biopharma with the huge uptick in financial services technology with Live Oak Bank and Encino and Aperture and companies like that. And so our economy is really diversified, Hinnant said. Downtown Wilmington is only 12 miles from Wrightsville Beach, and Wilmington features a variety of arts programs, the film industry, plus the emerging life sciences industries and startup market. Part of this can be attributed to the change in interest rates and financial market. J.D. Limburger, permitting director for New Hanover County, said the county was exploding in residential growth in 2019 because of the interest rates. But when those rates increased, he noted that residential activity decreased while commercial rose. What we noticed was that commercial was picking up, the mixed use, the apartment complexes. So here on the coastline of New Hanover County, we don't have a lot of land. So that's the big thing if you're forced to build up here. What I've been seeing a lot is a lot of mixed use, a lot of apartment complexes, Limburger said. Because of the lack of land, Limburger said there's been a push to incorporate more and more land in the northern part of the county. The northern part of New Hanover County is unincorporated, but it's where the majority of undeveloped land is in the county. But it doesn't have sufficient infrastructure. In response, the county is working on placing the necessary water and sewer lines so it can be prepared for future development rather than trying to play catch-up. Part of the reason the county can do that is because it's providing partial funding for different industrial business parks along the U.S. 421 corridor. One of those is the development of 10 buildings within the Wilmington Trade Center, for which the county is providing $3.3 million in funding. The infrastructure installation for that development will cost $8 million. The county has spent the past few years placing and extending water and sewer lines in the 421 corridor and beyond industrial parks to prepare for future growth. Lack of infrastructure is a factor that prevents companies from moving in or developing in certain areas. With the county tackling that issue along with continuing to approve incorporation and development in that part of the county that has room for it, it's solving both problems the county is facing. The infrastructure in large swaths of undeveloped land will draw in more developers to build more supply, and the industrial business parks being developed will attract more companies who are looking to expand in the coastal region. Digital editor David Pertell, writes about the luxury market hits new heights for beach homes. Prices at $10 million and above are no longer unheard of on the coast. The coastal region's attractiveness and relatively low cost compared to elite beach markets such as the Hamptons in New York has lured wealthy individuals from out of state, resulting in mega sale prices. As a case in point, a home on Figure 8 Island near Wilmington sold for nearly $14 million in July, adding to a string of coastal sales described as record-breaking in terms of price. The buyer was an investment banker from New York. The Triangle, Triad, and Charlotte continue to be strong feeder markets for luxury beach properties, but we're seeing more and more buyers coming from New York and Connecticut as well, said Nick Phillips, listing agent with Landmark Sotheby's International Realty, addressing changing dynamics of the coastal market. For 2022 and 2023 and 2024, the beach home market in the Wilmington region, which is New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties, surpassed $1 billion in sales. The figure reached $1.3 billion last year, with a record 764 homes sold, according to MLS data reviewed by Just for Buyers Realty. It's now common to see beach homes list for above eight figures, and buyers aren't shying away. Another home on Figure 8 Island sold late last year for $11.9 million. In January, one went for $12.6 million. Back in 2023, Raleigh entrepreneur John McConnell, founder of McConnell Golf, sold his home on the coveted island for $13 million. And as the luxury market booms, the overall housing market around the Wilmington area, stretching south to the border with South Carolina, continues to heat up. A drive along Highway 17, which was mostly empty not long ago, reveals new subdivisions filling up adjacent to retail developments bustling with activity. One trend that has kept the market for high-end homes going strong is the fact that many buyers are paying cash and avoiding high-interest mortgages. And on top of that, there's a limited supply of multimillion-dollar homes on the market at any given time. A key feature of the explosive growth of the North Carolina coast has been the sizzling hot market for luxury beach homes. Those factors should keep the market humming and prices rising in 2025. The next article in our Coastal Boom series is a feature about Chip Mahan, who's the co-founder and CEO of Live Oak Bank. Lauren Onosorge is the writer here. Mahan's mantra, be bold even in banking. When Brett Keynes, Stephen Hayes, and Yuri Nelson quit their jobs at Live Oak Bank to start their own company, CEO Chip Mahan was hardly the type to brusquely walk them out the door. It's been kind of fun to see these employees go from employee to owner, he said. The company Keynes, the former chief financial officer of Live Oak, and his co-founders would start in 2021 became Lumos Technologies, which now counts Live Oak as a client, and Mahan as an investor. It's not alone. At least a dozen companies were either incubated within Live Oak's walls or founded by one of its employees. Mahan said the entrepreneurial culture at Live Oak pays off both in terms of productivity and economic impact to its home region. Live Oak's story isn't unique. Its so-called PayPal Mafia effect a group of former employees and founders who created their own startup empires. In Raleigh, the rise of Red Hat led to multiple companies outside of Red Hat Tower. Bronto Software was co-founded by Joe Colopy. Matt Williamson, a Bronto veteran, co-founded multiple companies, including Windsor Circle. Chris Geis left Bronto for his own venture, Saguno Software, and even Jason Kaplan, the co-founder of Durham startup funder Bull City Ventures, used to work at Red Hat. But Live Oak isn't PayPal, Red Hat, or Bronto. It's a bank, the brainchild of an audacious founder who refused to back down, whether in the face of a skeptical analyst, a dumbfounded colleague, or at least on two occasions, a federal regulator. Mahan grew up in Buffalo wanting to be a doctor. When he was 11, his father died in a plane crash. Mahan and his 9-year-old brother moved to the family farm in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. "That changes you," he said. They drove for hours to his grandfather's farm, not wanting to get into a plane, and that Sunday at church, Mahan met the woman who would be his wife. "I wrote in her yearbook in high school, 'I'm going to marry you at 22,' he said. That prescient statement would become a pattern in his life. Bold statements and aggressive follow. Mahan went to Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia, hanging out with the football and lacrosse players who had gone to fancy prep schools. It's there that the dream of medical school died in a freshman chemistry class. Those prep school friends were using his notes and making better grades with them. "I felt like if you work this hard and you can only get a C, maybe you're in the wrong business," he said. "I felt like I had to outwork them." As a junior in college, Mahan followed two seniors into their interviews for a Wachovia Bank and Trust training program, and the bankers liked what they saw. They said, "If you can graduate, we'll hire you," he said. And they did. Also hired in 1973 was Lee Williams, his future Live Oak co-founder. They'd raised their kids together with their wives. Yes, he did marry Peggy, and Winston-Salem, both expecting to be at the bank forever. Williams recalls Mahan was a very good guy who liked being in charge of his own destiny and wasn't afraid to craft his own leadership trajectory, and he looked like he would go far with Wachovia until 10 years later his life took a turn. "I thought I was going to be CEO, then I finally figured out if one was going to be a CEO of a bank that size, you were going to have to move around a lot," he said. "Maybe you'd have a little money at 45, but you weren't going to own anything." At 31, Mahan decided to own something, so he left and eventually founded banks along the way. A few years later, Wachovia would move Williams to Wilmington, but the friends stayed in touch. David Lucht, another Live Oak co-founder and former vice president of credit, joined the scene in Kentucky, working for Cardinal Bank Shares, where Mahan led its bank holding company. "I was the brake and Chip was the accelerator," Lucht said. "The ideas he comes up with are so creative." One was the world's first internet bank, going online in 1995 as Security First Network Bank. "He's always excited about something new," Lucht said. "I've worked with a lot of CEOs, and he listens better than any others. He has better ideas than any CEO." In 2000, Mahan was running a software company, what would become S1 Corporation, when his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. "I said, 'I quit. We're going to move to Wilmington and we're going to be close to Duke Hospital and see what we can do about all this,'" Mahan said. Mahan moved to Wilmington full-time in 2001. In April of 2007, he filed the application for what would become Live Oak Bank and brought both Williams and Lucht in on the plan. "We're getting the band back together," Mahan told them. The bank started in a rental building a few miles away from its current sprawling campus. The vision was an entirely different business model, and it was a hard sell to banking regulators who were used to the status quo of financial institutions making loans in a specified geographic area. The founders of Live Oak were thinking about industries, not maps. It started the idea of making government-guaranteed loans to veterinarians in all 50 states. What regulators saw as a concentration risk, Mahan saw as a good math problem. "You're fundamentally taking very limited credit risk and generating a lot of free income," he said. "Take a $1 million loan with $750,000 guaranteed by the U.S. government. Live Oak would make $75,000 on the sale. The U.S. Small Business Administration allowed banks to sell down to $100,000. Live Oak could take the unguaranteed loan and sell it to another lender. The only thing left on my books is $100,000, he explained, but I got $75,000 on the first trade. But regulators didn't like his math. It was a long, hard fight, he said. It was a really long, hard fight. He equates it to 15 months worth of hand-to-hand combat with their spreadsheet gurus. But the bank opened in May of 2008. Then in September 2008, the world came to an end with the Great Recession. I thought we were done, Lucht recalled. The balance sheet had overgrown the equity, and the Securities and Exchange Commission was not happy. I pulled Chip out in the parking lot. I said, it's over. We're done. We just can't support ourselves, Williams recalled. Mahan responded, oh, don't worry about it. Glad to hear you're worried. I'm not. In March of 2009, Mahan was summoned to Atlanta and told to liquidate the bank or sell it. At the time, it had $140 million in commitments to veterinarians, and Mahan didn't like being told what to do. If you want to close the bank, close the bank. She backed down, he said. It was actually kind of fun, to be honest with you. A live oak was able to raise its way out of the crisis. Mahan's audaciousness never faltered. Colleagues described Mahan, called Hurricane Mahan by some, as a leader with a bold wish list who communicates in short emails. He makes audacious demands, and his colleagues scramble to execute. He likes messes, Lucht said. That's how you fix things. Bank President B.J. Losh said it's not fun to say no, like the time Mahan wanted to start a national bank just for Chick-fil-A operators. But Losh said Mahan is usually right. The bank hosts loan committee meetings every Friday, debates that are often standing room only. Live Oak, which grew to become the nation's largest SBA lender in dollars, has expanded to multiple industries. nCino, for example, came out of a loan origination platform Live Oak's technologists created in-house. We incubate these things to help Live Oak primarily, and then if it's good enough for us, it's good enough for another bank, Mahan said. Live Oak went past spin-outs, creating its own venture capital company, raising $1.5 billion from dozens of banks to make even more fintech investments through Canape Ventures. Several of those investments, too, are in North Carolina. Lumos, for example, came out of veterans of both Live Oak and nCino. That includes Lumos CEO Keynes, the former chief financial officer of Live Oak. Its founders describe it as a centralized hub for small business lending data, information that can help determine loan risk. Yuri Nelson, Lumos's chief technology officer, said an entrepreneurial spirit cultivated at Live Oak was an inspiration. Mahan has always been a great motivator in terms of making you realize you can do great things, he said, as they've seen it pay off for the community. The tech startups spinning out of Live Oak and nCino have helped cultivate a growing talent pool, one that in turn attracts more companies and more workers, and the tech cluster they're building has taken on a culture of its own. And it's getting noticed. Milken Institute's ranking of top cities, for example, ranked Raleigh first, making headlines across the state. But Wilmington, boosted by Live Oak's tree of companies, ranked 13th, up from 21st a year earlier. That's higher than the rankings of Durham, 16th, and Charlotte, 24th. The bank has also been growing its footprint. The McRae family owned 150 acres near its initial office. Mahan remembers going to the Patriarch with an offer for the 10 acres where he'd build Live Oak's first building and getting rejected. The family ultimately changed its mind, and today Live Oak occupies 25 acres for its buildings and another 53 acres there on the other side of the pond. It owns 11 acres of wetlands that it could build on someday if they ever become not wet, and there are about 40 acres under a conservation easement. Right now, there are about 600 people working at the campus, but Mahan estimates there's room for 6,000, and he dreams of building cottages on the campus and even a nice little restaurant. We can't do it until we make more money, he said, pointing to the SAS campus in Cary as an example of what's possible. But even without cottages, the bank has invested aggressively into its campus and accordingly is not into remote working. As a result, he said it's only lost one employee, a person he can name. I said, I completely understand. I'll do anything I can to get you a job at another bank, he said. What he can't comprehend is retirement. Mahan, who's 73, said he doesn't understand what his retired friends do all day. I do like being with these young kids, he said of his team. I like taking them in action. Continuing our Coastal Boom cover series, Kate Tracy tells us about a Wilmington distillery that sees its craft appetite pick up. Wilmington has much to be excited about when it comes to its food and beverage scene. Sonny Gerhart and Lauren Crawl Ivy at the restaurant Olivero this year received a James Beard Award nomination in the Best Chef Southeast category. Triangle businesses such as Pony Saurus Brewing Company have expanded to the coastal town. And Triangle restaurateur Giorgio Spicaccias has also opened three restaurants in and near Wilmington. His investors and friends Bill and Ashley Hawkins have said his presence there has made residents get excited about going out again and has helped other restaurants level up their standards. One Wilmington business that's had quite the journey over the last few years is End of Days Distillery, located about 20 blocks from the downtown riverfront at 1815 Castle Street. Husband and wife entrepreneurs Shane and Beth Faulkner opened End of Days in February of 2020. We've got a lot of tourism happening in Wilmington, and we thought, man, this town is really missing this really special opportunity, Beth Faulkner said. The town seemed to think so, too, as 2,500 people showed up to the distillery's grand opening when she was only expecting around 100. Within the first few weeks of being open, the distillery had to extend its bar to accommodate the weekend. For the past 2 years, End of Days has won awards for both the best craft cocktails in Wilmington. When the pandemic struck, it switched gears and began producing hand sanitizer instead of spirits to bring in revenue, which helped float the business through those crucial months. The distillery makes a wide variety of spirits, including vodka, rum, gin, whiskey, and a blue agave spirit. While the distillery sees its fair share of local residents popping in on a frequent basis, End of Days has a distinct appeal for tourists. Because we offer free tours and tastings every week, we have people from all over the country that are visiting Wilmington, and they're Googling what to do, and they end up coming to see us, Beth Faulkner said. That has a ripple effect across the rest of the country as the customers return home with End of Days spirits in tow, bringing a piece of Wilmington with them. At the end of 2023, the Faulkners added Concept Kitchen Company, a collection of two shipping containers that rotating chefs rent to cook for the distillery's guests. That gives our customers a really amazing food option to pair with their cocktails and experience they have at the distillery. It also promotes this entrepreneurial culinary showcase, she said. We want to help other people because we know how important it's been to us to be propelled, basically. You need someone who can help you and give you a hand up. The growth does not stop there, as the distillery's owners bought a 7,500-square-foot warehouse nearby to house their bottling and canning operations in 2023. Last year, End of Days landed a big deal. The Lenovo Center began selling its canned cocktails, called the Hurricane, at Carolina Hurricanes games. The business employs 20 full-time and part-time employees. With the momentum End of Days is seeing in Wilmington, will the business expand to other locales at the Triangle? At this moment, that is not in the immediate works, but I always say never, Beth Faulkner said. Continuing our Coastal Boom series, Zach Ezone writes about the cost of healthcare projects spiking as demand soars. Health systems along the coast are developing new facilities, but facing challenges as project costs continue to grow. Rising costs of construction material and labor are driving up the prices of these facilities intended to meet growing patient demand in coastal counties. State regulators in late November issued a certificate to Centara Health, approving a substantial cost increase of a new medical center under development in Elizabeth City, which is only 49 miles from Kitty Hawk. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services initially approved plans for a replacement hospital of Centara Albemarle Regional Medical Center in April 2021. Those initial plans called for a 110-bed facility at a cost of around $159 million. Centara now expects the hospital set to open later this year to cost about $246 million. State approval documents say the cost overrun is necessary due to increases in construction, contract, and site preparation costs, architect and engineering fees, furniture costs, consultant fees, financing and interest during construction, and project contingencies. Novant Health is also experiencing rising costs for a new hospital near the border of New Hanover and Pender counties. The health system in 2023 began construction on Scotts Hill Medical Center, a 66-bed facility that was intended to address the area's growing population and capacity constraints at New Hanover Regional Medical Center, which Novant acquired in 2021. Initially expected to cost about $210 million, State regulators last year approved Novant's request to increase the project total to about $295 million, an increase of about 40%. Like Centara, the state approval documents attribute the increase to the inflation of construction costs since Novant's initial application in September of 2020. Novant plans to fund the additional costs internally rather than through loans or bonds, according to state approval documents. Novant expects to begin offering services at the new medical center in 2026. However, more recently, Novant in November opened a 60,000-square-foot medical office building near the future hospital that offers both primary and specialty care services. Another significant healthcare project on the coast is under construction in Morehead City. Carteret Healthcare last year began construction on a new $50 million cancer center that is expected to open by the beginning of 2026. The process of planning the expansion began in 2020 with the health system's existing linear accelerator, a device used to treat cancer patients, nearing the end of support. But the health system was also seeing its patient volume grow in oncology services amid broader growth in patients visiting the hospital, said CEO Kyle Merrick. When the pandemic hit and people moved to remote work, the nearby area saw an influx of people using what were previously second homes as their primary residences. For instance, the hospital averages about 41,000 visits a year at its emergency department, up from around 36,000 prior to the pandemic. The goal of the expansion is to ensure Carteret Health can treat more patients locally, preventing them from needing to travel hours away to receive care. If you have to travel an hour and a half, 2.5 hours after radiation or an oncology infusion, that's a huge burden on you and your support person, Mark Merrick said. Being able to handle that here is, to me, a huge asset to the community and the patients we serve. We've got time for at least some of the reporter pages. We'll start with Transportation and Development, which is written by Lauren Onosorge. Hurricane Helene's damage strains NCDOT. North Carolina Secretary of Transportation Joey Hopkins says the agency's top priority continues to be the recovery from Hurricane Helene's devastating flooding last year. He said the estimated damage to infrastructure in western North Carolina add up to $5 billion, scales higher than what we've ever dealt with. For perspective, 2018's Hurricane Florence did $250 million worth of infrastructure damage, the second highest amount ever in the state. NCDOT is focused on the mountain region without curtailing long-planned capital projects elsewhere, including the Triangle. The fast-growing region around Raleigh and Durham is a hotspot for road work and highway expansions, with major projects like Complete 540 moving ahead. Hopkins said nearly $340 million has been spent related to Helene recovery efforts, about half the amount the state spent on storm recovery in the previous 10 years combined. This is just a scale and volume that we've never seen here, he said. Around 2,000 NCDOT workers, 280 contractors, and nearly 50 consulting firms are involved in the effort. Hopkins estimates there were 93,000 individual damage sites as a result of the storm and flooding, from huge projects like repairs along Interstate 40 to trees that fell on homes and roads. Of the 1,400 roadways impacted by the storm, about 180 remain closed. The state is relying heavily on federal funding to pay for the recovery effort. The Federal Highway Administration awarded North Carolina $100 million in quick release funds last December for storm repairs. Since then, the state has been able to access an additional $250 million. That's $350 million in funding guaranteed to go to North Carolina for Helene, Hopkins said. In terms of FEMA dollars, Hopkins said NCDOT has secured roughly $48 million, with $8 million going toward debris removal and the remainder primarily for bridge projects. NCDOT is also pulling money from its highway fund, typically earmarked for operations and maintenance, along with the state's highway trust fund, which covers capital projects. Complete 540 to begin final phase around Raleigh. In a matter of months, dirt will start moving for the final phase of the Complete 540 project to finish the highway loop around Raleigh. Phase 1 of the tolled highway, stretching from the NC-55 bypass in Apex to Interstate 40 in Garner, has seen 17 million transactions since opening to traffic in September. Now much of the anticipation has shifted to Phase 2, which runs from I-40 to I-87 in Knightdale. We'll really see construction take off this year, NC Department of Transportation Secretary Joey Hopkins said, adding that completion is scheduled for fall 2028. Closing the loop is a complicated project, as North Carolinians will soon see firsthand. There are new location projects. We're literally cutting a road through the woods, said Alan Shapiro, deputy chief engineer at the NC Turnpike Authority. Tree clearing began in January. A pre-construction conference with one of the project's contractors happens in the next several weeks, followed by more meetings. Designs are being finalized, and once they are approved, contractors can get out and start moving dirt, Shapiro said, noting that could happen by early summer. Opponents raise issues with RDU park plans. Hundreds of people gathered at the Raleigh-Durham International Airport in January to rally against a potential plan to turn part of Lake Crabtree County Park into an, quote, entertainment destination, unquote. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority last year put out a request for interest known as an RFI, seeking developers interested in developing a 136-acre portion of the park, which sits just off Interstate 40 at Aviation Parkway. The airport-controlled land is leased to Wake County, which manages the park. The goal is to create more revenue to pay for capital projects at the airport, but many in the crowd at the meeting questioned whether it would be worth it. Is this a rounding error, or does this really move the needle? Because it's going to cause more damage to the airport's reputation when you need support, said Dave Anderson with Triangle Off-Road Cyclists. Anderson was one of the more than 40 speakers, none of whom spoke in favor of the outright developing the park. The Airport Authority Board made no decisions during the hours-long meeting. No plans were presented, and no developers spoke on potential projects. Speakers at the meeting noted that there's already entertainment and shopping nearby, including the developing project around the Lenovo Center. The retail and restaurants section is written by Kate Tracy. Cary Barbecue Spot files for bankruptcy. Dickie's Barbecue Pit in Cary has closed and filed for bankruptcy. The restaurant at 1102 Parkside Main Street in West Cary's Parkside Town Commons Shopping Center closed in December and filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy liquidation. The franchise business had $347,917 in total liabilities and $47,633 in assets, according to bankruptcy documents. The restaurant opened in 2017. Bankruptcy attorney Danny Bradford is representing Dickie's. He said the restaurant officially closed at the end of December. He attributed the closure and subsequent bankruptcy to the lack of foot traffic at the shopping center. A lot of businesses there, particularly the restaurants, have failed in the last few years, Bradford said. The Cary Dickie's lost $132,000 in revenue between 2023 and 2024. The restaurant brought in $929,229 in revenue in 2023, but that dropped to $797,224 last year. Parkside Town Commons lists 55 tenants on its website, including BB's Crispy Chicken, the Agency Kitchen and Bar, Golf Galaxy, and Hobby Lobby. Dickie's is not the only restaurant to have filed for bankruptcy and closed at Parkside Town Commons. Bella Monica, an Italian restaurant, filed for bankruptcy in 2019 and has since closed. Dickie also had a $150,000 loan from the U.S. Small Business Administration's Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, but Bradford said that loan was not much of a factor in Dickie's bankruptcy situation. The restaurant was current on its loan repayments. Honestly, during COVID, I think the business was doing okay. Mainly what's happened is the traffic in this shopping center has died down, he said. The restaurant owes Kite Realty Group of Indianapolis $169,745 in future lease deficiencies and grease trap charges per bankruptcy documents. The business still has years to go on its lease, but paid rent through December, Bradford said. The Cary franchise owner, William DeArmy, did not return requests for comment. The only remaining Dickie's restaurants in North Carolina are in Albemarle and Southern Pines, per its website. At Crabtree Mall, Diamonds Direct is to replace a bank branch. Diamonds may be forever, but their store locations are not. In the case of Diamonds Direct in Raleigh, the company has made the decision to relocate to a sparkling new showroom by Crabtree Valley Mall. The Charlotte-based jewelry chain is building a store at 4321 Glenwood Avenue, next to its current store at 4401 Glenwood Avenue. The site was formerly home to a Wells Fargo bank branch, but the building was demolished earlier this month. In its place, Diamonds Direct is planning a more than 6,000-square-foot building for its newly minted showroom. The building will include a modern cutting-edge sales floor in addition to a glorious mezzanine, said Lev Schneldman, the Raleigh store's vice president. The new space will offer top-quality finished jewelry and high-end timepieces, he said. The store plans to open in the fall. The current showroom will remain open until then. CVM Holdings owns the mall and the Diamonds Direct Out parcels. In 2022, Wells Fargo told regulators it would close the branch. Diamonds Direct has been at Crabtree Mall since 2008, the same year it sold a $1 million diamond engagement ring. The store lists 19 employees in Raleigh on its website. In Knightdale, a snack spot hunts for space after property sold. A treat shop in Knightdale is looking for a new home after its property was sold, but finding new space has proven difficult amid the Triangle's hot retail market. Knightdale Pelican Snowballs sells New Orleans-style shaved ice out of a shop with pink columns and a blue roof at 1004 Big Oak Court near the Interstate 540 and Highway 64 interchange. The property's new owner, Wilson-based Vet Pets, plans to demolish the shop to make way for a new build, according to Pelicans. Rowdy Ridgebacks Holdings, LLC, purchased the property for $1.15 million in December per Wake County property records. The LLC lists the Wilson address for Vet Pets, a fast-growing veterinary company. Vet Pets lists two veterinary hospitals already in Knightdale on its website. Knightdale Animal Hospital and Wake Veterinary Medical Center, Vet Pets has more than 30 practices throughout North Carolina. For Pelican Snowballs, the struggle to find a new location is real. Franchise owner Cody Hagan is finding that there's a scarcity of available retail space, especially in fast-growing Knightdale. SAC Ezone brings us the healthcare and life sciences section. ECU plans to expand its medical school. East Carolina University will soon begin construction on a $265 million facility designed to increase the university's ability to educate more physicians. With the construction of the Center for Medical Education building, ECU will add a 195,000 square foot facility to its existing Brody School of Medicine. The investment will allow the university to further expand its class size as North Carolina and the rest of the country grapples with physician shortages. The investment comes as the U.S. and North Carolina face a shortage of physicians and health care providers. The Association of American Medical Colleges in early 2024 projected that the country will be short up to 86,000 doctors by 2036. The Center for Medical Education building is a seven-story facility, with three of the floors serving as simulation space to support nursing and allied health students. The new facility will connect directly to the medical school's existing building, which will house all faculty offices and lab spaces. Dr. Jason Higginson became executive dean of the Brody School of Medicine about 3 years ago, at which time the school had around 86 students per graduating class. When the new facility opens in 2027, the school will expand its class size to 120 students. The school is developing the new facility to potentially support 160 students at maximum capacity. Compared to other medical schools in the state, ECU fills a few specific needs for North Carolina, Higginson said. Some of this is by design. ECU requires that its medical school students are North Carolina residents. They have to have some tie to the area, Higginson said. Our admissions criteria favor students, particularly from the eastern part of the state, because that's the community that we're attempting to serve. ECU had 71 students graduate from its medical school in 2018. Of those graduates, 52% were still practicing or training in North Carolina 5 years later. Construction is scheduled to begin in March and wrap up in July of 2027. Hospitals see financial outlook improve. Fitch Ratings has improved its outlook for two Triangle health systems as hospitals continue to recover from financial challenges tied to the pandemic. Fitch recently updated its outlook for UNC Health Rex, which has hospitals in Raleigh and Holly Springs, from stable to positive, and revised its outlook for Wake MedHealth from negative to stable, citing changes the health systems have made and the robust population growth in the region. Rex's outlook reflects Fitch's expectation that its operating performance will continue to improve and be sound over the medium term after a period of compressed profitability from challenges related to the pandemic, when health systems nationwide grappled with labor shortages and inflationary pressures. RECs in fiscal year 2024 generated $44.4 million in operating income with a 2.6% operating margin and 8.3% operating EBITDA margin. This is significantly improved from the organization's 0.7% operating margin and 6.7% operating EBITDA margin in fiscal year 2022. The health system improved operations by reducing contract labor expenses and reducing patients' average length of stay, among other measures. Charles River Labs to close Triangle sites. A global pharmaceutical company is scaling back operations in the Triangle as it closes one facility and plans to wind down operations at another. Charles River Laboratories informed state officials recently of its decision to close the facility in Durham by late March. The closure comes amid a broader restructuring at Charles River, a contract research organization that provides products and services to pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies to further drug discovery and development. The Massachusetts-based company on March 28th will begin the process of closing a facility at 4025 Stirrup Creek Drive. There are 31 employees who will be impacted by the closure at that time. The addition is part of the company's continuous evaluation of its business operations, a spokesperson said in an emailed statement to Triangle Business Journal. After a thoughtful review, we determined the Pathology Associates facility in Durham, NC, is not a strategic fit, the statement said. Separately, Charles River also expects to wind down operations this year at a drug discovery facility in Research Triangle Park, a company spokesperson said. Here are some stats for our cover story. The median household income in Brunswick County is $74,000. The median age is 54.7 years, and the non-white population is 16.1%. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.